Hey, you guys know I like to DIY just about everything, right? And not just in the kitchen. When it comes to taking care of my car, I look no further than Advance Auto Parts. For 75 years, Advance Auto Parts has helped a nation of do-it-yourselfers like myself fix their vehicles. They're the place I go for quality auto parts, advice, and accessories. Advance is everywhere now, with over 5,200 stores, serving close to 1,300 independently owned CarQuest branded stores in the US and Canada. They can provide you with everything you need to keep your car running smooth. Visit them on the web at advanceautoparts.com. Today, listeners of the show can save 20% off their first order by visiting advanceautooffer.com/foodie and entering the promo code AAP20CAST at checkout. That's advanceautooffer.com/foodie. Enter promo code AAP, the number 20, CAST. Now, I sucked at auto repair when I was younger. Seriously, I won't lie, I was horrible. When I got my first car, it had a bad carburetor, and it was leaking gas like a 90-year-old man at a chili cook-off. So I tried to fix it myself. I bought a do-it-yourself fix-it kit, and I rebuilt it. I ended up with 8 leftover parts and a carburetor that idled at 2,000 RPMs. I'm not kidding. It made getting out of first a breeze, but it cost me a small fortune in gas. If only I had a place like Advance back then. Advance Auto Parts. Service is our best part. Hey, so you know, I get a lot of health and nutrition news in my Google News feed every morning. And I read this interesting study they did that talked about the rising popularity of cooking with marijuana oil. I mean, it's getting really popular. You take some olive oil, infuse it with some pot, and either cook with it, dip bread in it, or just drink it. And the study that they did proved that apparently prolonged use of marijuana oil has shown a dramatic increase in short-term memory loss. Now, can you believe that? I mean, that just sounds like a crock of shit to me. And you know how I feel about these studies. They're always coming out with something. This is good for you. This is bad for you. Wait, no, it's good for you. Now, the next thing you know, they'll be telling you that prolonged use of marijuana oil will show an increase in short-term memory loss. Yeah, welcome back, everybody. Summer's about over. Another month left. Hope you all had and are still having a good one. Our garden went nuts this year. Had maybe one of the most productive growing seasons ever, thanks to Michelle. She planted so many cool new things this year from seed, and we had so many things to try at our table. It was really fun to see things clicking so well, so I think I'm going to miss it when it all dies off. Come October, things are pretty much dead around here. Some of the seeds that she germinated this year and got great success from were some of the same things that she tried last year. So I don't know what changed, maybe the weather or something. Just a blessed summer for growing. I saw pictures from a couple of years ago of our backyard or space, as some might call it. And compared to how it looks now, it's indistinguishable. I love it. Speaking of Farm Fresh, and this is a big story, apparently that Amazon partnership with Whole Foods is going to be just as cool as I thought it was going to be. They announced last week that they would immediately be lowering prices this week. So all of you who like to refer to it as Whole Paycheck will be happy to see that. If you go into Whole Foods as of today, you'll start to see lower prices, which is not something we thought we'd ever see. Up, yes, not down. For starters, they're lowering prices on a selection of best-selling staples. Bananas, organic avocados, organic large brown eggs, organic responsibly farmed salmon and tilapia, organic baby kale and baby lettuce, animal welfare rated 85% lean ground beef, creamy and crunchy almond butter, organic Gala and Fuji apples, organic rotisserie chicken, 365 everyday value organic butter, and much more. Jesus, I had not heard of half of that stuff. What the hell does animal welfare rated lean ground beef mean? Was the cow on food stamps? Wait, you know, just say cruelty free and be done with it. Animal welfare rated. What the hell is that? Why come up with new ways to allow people to make fun of you? You know? Anyway, here's the kicker. If you have an Amazon Prime membership, you'll get special discounts and other perks. Whole Foods will be treating Prime like a customer rewards program. And not only that, but if you prefer to get your groceries delivered, you can get Whole Foods private label products, like all of its 365 line, which I like a lot, through Amazon Fresh, Prime Pantry, and Prime Now. And to further sweeten the deal, you'll be able to pick up Amazon packages through their locker systems at Whole Foods markets. So that $100 a year Prime membership seems like a screaming good deal more and more each day, right? You know, Amazon is going to murder retail when all is said and done. I swear. I even read one piece that said that Amazon really doesn't care if it makes a profit on food. They simply want to continue to sell those Prime memberships because that's a steady stream of money in the bank. Now, one of the food bloggers that I saw commenting on it on Twitter said that she'll spend $100 or more over what she'd spend shopping at Trader Joe's. I said that honestly, I don't make those comparisons. I mean, I compare shopping in Whole Foods to a farmer's market because you're getting a lot of imported stuff at Trader Joe's. At Whole Foods, you're getting very fresh produce from a lot of California growers, and the meat is fresher. It's not prepackaged from New Zealand or God knows where else. And the produce at Trader Joe's, sometimes it's bad when you get it home. Now, compare the quality and the prices of that, what you'd get at, say, Whole Foods, to shopping at a grocery store. And that's a little more of a level playing field. Also, listen, when you shop at Whole Foods, you got to think a little harder. Don't buy things you think you might eat or think you might eat all of. You know, you can experiment with a box of cereal at Trader Joe's or at the grocery store if it's on sale or it's cheaper, and you won't be out too much money. But if you're not sure about something at Whole Foods, the waste will cost you. You know, just stay away from the holistic stuff, all right, because that'll bankrupt you. Okay, so kind of picking up where we left off in the last episode where I bashed on food critics again, this I thought was a good segue, or at least a more positive way of presenting the other side of the coin. I generally do not care for food critics. Not food writers, per se. I love when people write about food. It's restaurant critiques that I mostly find unsettling. But not all food critics. There are a few that I think are incredible, useful, honest, insightful, and generally damned good at what they do. Ruth Reichel comes to mind first and foremost, but right next to her is Jonathan Gold, who's the crown jewel here in Los Angeles. He writes for the LA Times and has become somewhat of a rock star among budding journalists who want to reach his level of expertise in food writing. In the documentary City of Gold, we get a chance to see who Gold is, what makes him tick, his love for the city of Los Angeles, which is great, and how revered he is by so many chefs nationwide. The documentary is directed by Laura Gabbert, who I think did an amazing job of capturing the true essence of this guy. In it, we learn that he stumbled into the job at the LA Times. He didn't mean to get the job, but got it anyway. That he procrastinates a lot. He reads so many books that he stopped buying bookshelves and instead just stacks them on his stairs. It's so funny. He knows every single hole-in-the-wall restaurant in Los Angeles. And more than quite a few in New York as well. He's hit the soft spot of way too many chefs to list. A lot of chefs that are interviewed in this documentary, Nancy Silverton, Ludo, David Chang, even Andrew Zimmern.
He became a figure of the democratizing movement in culture, not just in writing, not just in food writing, but in the ability to tell stories about America and the city of Los Angeles in specific through a series of, you know, restaurants and food experiences that other people weren't writing about. He gave it value.
I think what makes this man's writing important is not just his evaluation of the food that he's writing about, but the experiences, the culture that surrounds the food, the stories behind it. I think Zimmern makes a great point here. You don't get this kind of insight from reading a Yelp review or Joe Blogger, who, you know, thinks he or she has something earth-shattering to say. This is what separates a true journalist like Jonathan and pretty much everybody else. I don't know if I've talked much about this, but when I was in ninth grade, 14 years old, I met who would turn out to be my best friend in high school. He was a year younger than I was. He was walking around with this old beat-up Asahi 35mm camera and taking pictures for the school yearbook and the newspaper. I told him that my brother was a journalist, that I grew up flooded with stories about journalism, that I had a connection to it. Newspaper life in my house when I was a kid was dinner conversation, and I spent a lot of my youth with my brother in the newsroom. He told me I should join the staff and I should be a second photographer. He couldn't do it all by himself. It would be fun. We could do it together. So I did, and I felt like suddenly I was on a path to be just like my brother, who I looked up to more than anybody. And that passion stayed with me right through my 20s, into my 30s. I went to college. I shot for several school papers, local papers, weekly circulars, stock agencies, eventually working my way up to the pre-press desk at the Los Angeles Times before I saw an opportunity to work in publishing and advertising. I still have that passion inside of me. It's not as hot as it once was, but I love the world of journalism. It's in my blood. Yes, look, there are questionable ethics at times, and that comes from the upper brass. But op-ed pieces aside, if we didn't have journalism, newspapers, news outlets, how in the hell would we know what's truly happening in the world? We've always relied on journalists to keep their fingers on the pulse of what's going on in the world and deliver the news in a neatly wrapped package. It's a stressful business, okay? The hours are long. There's very little downtime for journalists. The deadlines are often brutal. The stress to write a cohesive piece with insight done in an intelligent way is incomprehensible at times. It's not an easy job. And that's why all of this hate for the media and this horseshit fake news stuff just drives me nuts. There's a certain sector of our population that would like to shut the traditional media outlets down, bankrupt them, replace them with the White House-run newsrooms so we're getting the true story. Now, that seems to be working for North Korea, right? Now, propaganda was hot in a certain country in Europe in the 30s, too. And how'd that work out? Well, I got way off track here, but the documentary shows a creative meeting between Gold's editors and Jonathan as they talk through ideas about what he'll write about next. And apparently, just getting this guy to decide on what to write is only half the battle.
So, Alice, I wanted to talk about some of these pieces we wanted Jonathan to do.
Good.
Suggestions, rather.
Right. Well, I feel the most important thing, and we've talked a little bit about this before, is the Grand Central Market piece.
It's true. It's at that tipping point. It's been a symbol of a certain kind of Los Angeles for a very long time. As it's been redeveloped and the new restaurants are coming in, or the new fancy butchers, it's going to stop being the sort of place that you associate with the smells and the tastes and the look of that part of Los Angeles into being the sort of precious, artisanal, you know, aren't we special to pay $35.99 for a skirt steak kind of market.
You know, kind of pupuseria exists next to a fancy cheese store.
Yeah.
Is that the challenge that the owners now face?
It is. I mean, I like a lot of the new places, and I shop there all the time, but yeah, you have to have a place where you have, like, the tastes of sort of last century Los Angeles existing with the modern taste. There's something cultural about it, and there's something about it that has become part of Los Angeles that I think is sort of magical. It's like, when do you start cutting into the flesh and bone of the market? And that's a hard question to answer, and I think that would be something really interesting to address.
Yeah.
I'm hoping we can get to that piece sooner rather than later.
Hey, not to press too deep on this whole media thing, but I thought This is a good time to bring this up, okay, since it's somewhat relevant, even though we're talking about food, but we're also talking about journalism. If you really hate the newspaper business, media in general, you find them distasteful and untruthful and wish they'd all just go away, watch the Netflix documentary Nobody Speak. While I don't find TMZ or Gawker's style of ambulance chasing all that useful, I think shutting the media up is one step closer to totalitarianism. I wasn't born into a country like that, and I don't want to die in a country like that. Pick and choose your newspaper, but don't shut the ones down that you disagree with. That doesn't make America great again, not by a long shot. But let me put this into perspective as it relates to our subject here today. Food critiques are feature stories. They're opinion pieces and news pieces wrapped into one. The goal is to report on the restaurant, the menu options, the food it provides, the general experience that you can expect when you dine there. Then it gives the critic's opinion on all of those things. What was his or her experience like? That's what a review of a restaurant is. Now imagine if a restaurant did unspeakable things, served food that made its customers sick, treated them rudely, food was late coming from the kitchen. There were rodents everywhere, cockroaches. Then it receives a consistent series of bad reviews from established food critics at established papers. Then turns around and calls all of those reviews fake news. Then manages to rally all the regulars of that restaurant to tweet negative things about the papers or the critics who gave those reviews. That sounds pretty far-fetched, ridiculous, right? Take it one step further. Imagine we had to have websites like factcheck.org or Politico to back up those claims by the critics to prove that they're right about the restaurant. And then even still, there would be fans of the place vehemently denying everything and referencing unknown food bloggers from websites you've never heard of to give the restaurant glowing reviews. The opposite of what you're reading from the paid professional journalists at these established media outlets. I know this sounds ridiculous, and it's probably a major stretch, I agree. But if the facts are there, and they can be backed up by numerous sources, a bad review is warranted, and you don't have a leg to stand on. Okay? I'm sorry, I got way off topic, but my defense of journalism and dependable media outlets like Washington Post, Reuters, AP, New York Times, it's never going to end. And are they perfect? Hell no. They make mistakes, of course. Do they retract those mistakes? Yes, it's their job to do that. I just think it would be nice to see that kind of honesty from other people. Okay, I'm done. I'm sorry. All right, so look, if you're a food writer and anyone's going to shit on you, it would probably be David Chang. But if you're Jonathan Gold, you're golden. Okay? Here's what Chang has to say about Gold.
Whenever we talk about criticism in New York, Jonathan Gold's name always comes up. We're always like, I wish we had Jonathan Gold as our chief critic in New York, because I think he's very fair. I think what separates Jonathan from the rest of the critics is his empathy level is higher than anybody else's. And I think that shows in his writing. But this is what pisses me off about Jay Gold. I was in a place that did very esoteric Korean chicken barbecue. I was like, this is great. I'm not going to tell anybody about it. And then in the corner, I see Jonathan Gold's review. And I was like, motherfucker, he knows every place. I don't know how he does it. You know, I don't know any Korean that knows more about Korean food than Jonathan Gold. I don't know anybody that knows every taco stop.
This goes right back to that thing I said about Guy Fieri. He's like a food critic, in a way. You know, he goes to these places. Places he's either tried already or places he's been told he'll love. And he does a half-hour food critique of this place with a huge audience. And because people love him and respect his opinion, he can turn a hole in the wall into like a hole in a mountain overnight. That's what Gold does, and does it very well. And what you start to see in this documentary is his infatuation with even the smallest of food trucks or food carts. Food from all cultures is littered everywhere throughout Southern California, especially Los Angeles. Places you may have driven past, you may have seen them before, but you never stepped in. Getting Gold to write about you is like money in the bank. It will make you. But where Gold can turn your restaurant or your food truck around, there's Yelp, just waiting there to suck the energy out of the room. Or Jill and Joe Blogger, who think they've got this whole thing figured out. Never studied journalism, maybe took a creative writing class in college. And suddenly, they're on the precipice of a Pulitzer Prize for their judicious review of Billy Bob's Crab Shack and the lack of napkins at each table or the inadequate amount of drawn butter that they provide you with. 2 stars.
Food and writing have gone together throughout history. If you look at France in the 18th century or China in the 12th century, there wasn't just food. There was food and someone writing about it, food and someone thinking about it. And that relationship is what turned food from fuel to food into an art form. It's true of literature, it's true of plays, it's true of all cultural art forms, that writing is what made them digestible, so to speak, by the masses. You're trying to tell a story, make that experience into something much bigger. But at a certain point, everyone, I mean, look at Yelp, it's such an American thing where everyone then believes they are the critic and they are the expert.
You know, now everybody thinks, oh, I can go to a restaurant and write what I think about it. And if I use words like toothsome, you know, then, hey, I'm a food writer.
They all seem to use the word amazing now. It's amazing. The Mexican corn is amazing. You know, it's like, amazing doesn't tell me anything.
What is the role of the critic is a question that's being asked in, I think, every area of culture right now. Because it's like, well, why do I need a food critic if I have Yelp? And why do I need a book critic if I've got Amazon reviews? I think what a critic brings to the table is knowledge. You know that he's done his homework. You know, if you're really interested in a subject, you are going to find the critics that speak to you, that you don't always agree with, but that speak to you, that you feel you learned something from, that you found a new way of seeing something after reading what they had to say.
Amazing doesn't tell me anything. Right there, that's where I falter. I did that to Silverton, felt like an idiot. But I've written reviews before, and I've been more thoughtful about that because I've had time to think and write. Maybe on the spot you might think, damn, this is amazing. But when you sit in front of the keyboard, all it takes is some thought. Or open the thesaurus and find a new word to use, then use the shit out of it until you can find another one. And above all else, be fair, okay? Just be fair. Bring something to the table. Something new. Or better yet, don't review restaurants. Don't review chefs. Instead, talk about your experience. How'd the food make you feel? Did it make you, did it take you somewhere you weren't expecting to go? Were you influenced by it? Maybe it made you want to go home and try the food yourself. Try to make it in your kitchen. Jay Gold writes in ways no one else does. He's thoughtful. He writes meaningful sentences. When he actually writes, you'd think for a man that has so much to say, he'd be in a hurry to say it, but he's not. He's the worst kind of procrastinator, and it drives his editors batshit. If he were anybody else, he'd have been fired. But you don't fire a man like Jonathan. You find ways to light a fire under his ass to get him to write.
I'm definitely a great procrastinator. I suppose when I need to have an attention span for something, I have an attention span for something. But it's hard to explain. So for some reason you wanted that, right?
Yeah, that was great. That was perfect.
Otherwise I would have sent the call away. as is my wont. Keep as new. Maybe if the internet went away, but even before the internet, I would always find, 12 books and 17 magazines I had to read before I could finish an article. Now I have the attention span of a gnat.
Being Jonathan's editor, it's like being someone's like teenage stalker for me. I knew you won't turn his piece in even if he agrees to do it. And then I realized that what it was gonna take would be, bordering on psychotic levels of email and phone and text harassment.
I'll call when I get back. You know, actually, I went to somebody who specialized in writer's block, and that was her thing. And she just threw her hands up and says, usually I do writer's block, I do people who can't write. There's something that keeps them from writing. Yet you publish 150,000 words a year. Clearly you're writing. That I'm not, I don't deny that what you're experiencing is something, but I have no idea what it is. I mean, I can sit down and I can say that, oh, I'm going to do this piece a week early, but I end up, like, you know, torturing one paragraph for, you know, 3.5 days. And then somebody calls and starts yelling at me, and the rest of the piece will be done in an hour and a half.
I've worked with newspaper editors, section chiefs, department heads, and one editor-in-chief of the LA Times, who I was close personal friends with. I know the struggles of that job. The pressure that they're under, the management style required to get these people to write and to write something worth reading. It's pressure no sane person would ever want. It makes you old fast. These guys drink in their newsrooms. They're so stressed out. I'm not kidding you. And for all the pressure that I've seen editors under, I could not imagine what it might be like to have to squeeze water from a rock like gold.
So, all right. What else we need to talk about is what you think you might be doing in terms of reviews for the next couple of weeks.
I think next week will be this new Sichuan restaurant in Surprise, Alhambra. That is called Chengdu Taste. Like, there's a dish on the menu called, intriguingly enough, Little Sister's Spicy Rabbit.
Yeah. Great.
I don't think they're actually cooking...
Rabbit?
Oh, it's rabbit, but I don't think it's like the Little Sister's Rabbit. I think it's in the style of the way Little Sister would make it. Unless it actually was...
I sort of regard him rabbit, some days as my younger, much smarter little brother. And I'm the firstborn, and I'm the responsible one, and I have to make the trains run on time. And he's the funny, smart, talented one, and I, there's probably some love buried down there deep inside, but it's, sometimes the role is difficult to play. So how difficult, all right, is it going to be a photograph there? Is there going to be a language barrier?
There's going to be a language barrier.
We need to take care of that this afternoon. If you're
okay, I'll do that.
Okay.
You come up with the cattle prod, I'll come up with the copy.
Awesome.
City of Gold also digs into his personal life, his long-term relationship with his wife, who they're very cute together, by the way, what his life was like when he was growing up, his father, who wanted desperately actually to be a writer himself. The little-known fact, at least to me, was that he was an accomplished cellist, even played the cello in a punk band at one point. Yeah, a punk band. Imagine that. And then imagine what Gold looks like. It was surreal. And he was quite good at it, too. No, the film explores all of his relationships. The relationship with his brother, who was an active environmentalist. He needles Gold about all the things that he eats and how it's depleting the ocean of life. Now, pretty messed up thing to have to deal with, right? Your brothers, you know, generally break each other's balls, as it is. But to have your brother nagging you about eating the ocean to extinction is something else altogether. In one scene, his brother talks about the time that he asked Jonathan to write a piece on the importance of putting an end to the killing of sharks for shark fin soup, which is popular in China and elsewhere in Asia. Well, it took him a while, but once he finally wrote the piece, it proved to be critical to their campaign.
I have to be an environmentalist because Jonathan's eating everything I'm trying to save.
The question is whether or not you go to the point of using a regulatory mechanism to have this country lead by example.
I've often thought that one of my biggest achievements was getting my brother to write an op-ed piece on a bill that we were pushing to ban the sale of shark fin products in the state of California.
Believe me, I'd like to see, you know, shark fin soup banned tomorrow.
It took me 4 months to get him to write that piece. But I read his piece and my anger melted away.
But as much as you might love kampoi, dried flotation bladders, crab eggs, braised fish cheeks, and the other esoterica of Cantonese seafood cooking, it is hard to work up an appetite for the bitter taste of extinction.
I had people who worked on the bill say that that was one of the most critical aspects of the entire campaign to get the bill passed. And so the power of how well he writes really made a big difference.
Okay, one last thing, and then I'll close here. It seems I can't review a movie without giving too much away, although this doesn't really have a plot. And you really do have to see it to get the full concept of what the movie's about. I'm just trying to get you interested in watching the movie. There are so many things in it, and I know I'm not really doing it much justice right now, but I only have half an hour here. In one of the last scenes, Gold speaks in front of a group of people in a bookstore and reads an early essay that he wrote about a week after the LA riots in 92. If none of you know about that, I mean, the town was on fire. It was horrible. From the Rodney King verdict. This, as my friend Peter so eloquently put it, is the nucleus of the film. Peter called City of Gold a 90-minute love letter to L.A., and this is exactly what his essay is.
It is 8 o'clock, and the light has started to fade. As I sit on the floor of my apartment, staring at the spot where the rain not so much dripped as oozed from the door jamb. For the last decade or so, I have lived in a creaking apartment, probably swank in its day, that has been home to a dog trainer, a fiddle player, and a series of writers in a smartly column building in an aging neighborhood nobody has yet bothered to name. Downstairs, a baby cries out in Spanish. In the distance, the ghetto boys boom from a passing truck. For the fifth time in about an hour, I think about the other parts of town. The ones with croissant shops on the street corners and air-conditioned shopping malls and neighbors who look like me. Before the fires of April, there were 14 different kinds of ethnic restaurants within a 5-minute walk. Now there are just 10. For a while, everything in the neighborhood seemed just a little more ominous. The Saturday night gunshots a little louder, the omnipresent sirens and helicopters a little closer to home. When you spend some time in my neighborhood, you learn the rhythm of the place. The mornings when the Mexican's fruit truck shows up on the corner, the hour when Filipino teenagers snack on liver buns and Coca-Cola at the Pancit shop. The peaceful time in late afternoon when the avenue flows majestically. Guatemalan women walk home from Ralph's with bags of groceries balanced expertly on their heads. Salvadoran construction workers crowd into the local Korean noodle shop for steamed dumplings. In this neighborhood, most of us are just passing through. Transients on our way to more permanent homes in Long Beach or Huntington Park. We are all citizens of the world. We are all strangers together. But to my Korean landlords, this neighborhood is home. I have been awakened before dawn by the rhythmic thud of their pounding garlic into paste on the back porch. I have stumbled out the door with an armful of wet laundry, only to find all of the clotheslines taken up by drying fish. I have also come home from work to find the back stairs spread with leaves of cabbage, curing in the hot sun. Even when the sun was shot a half mile south of here, there was no questioning of their sense of place. The landlords keep to themselves, and so do I. I often wish that they would invite me over for dinner. Thanks.
City of Gold is not available on Blu-ray or in HD at all, as far as I can tell. You can buy it on DVD or digital download from iTunes, Amazon, YouTube, Vudu, Google Play. If you've never read Gold's work or truly experienced the culture of Los Angeles, this will give you that. It's a definite must-see. Hey, I talked about carb cutting a couple of months ago. I did that whole show on it, and the response was great, and I stand by that too. It's great for adults, okay? But did any of you see the story about paleo baby food? Apparently, a publisher in Australia was set to release a paleo diet book for new moms, but it was halted over concerns that the recipes could be harmful to kids. Now, there were recipes in there for things like formula, made from chicken liver and bone broth, and that was it. That recipe in particular, which was part of the story, kind of the main part of the story, doctors said it contained over 10 times more vitamin A than is considered safe for infants. In addition to that, recipes like this lack other important nutrients that children need. Now look, I see nothing wrong with paleo diets, ketone-heavy diets, carb-free diets, any diet you want to be on that works for you. But don't subject your kids to it, especially if it's going to be harmful to them. One of the doctors in Australia said that she was almost certain that babies would die if that book went to print and mothers started feeding that to their kids. I mean, the cookbook even had a dumb title, Bubba Yum Yum, The Paleo Way for New Mums, Babies, and Toddlers. And this isn't just an Australian thing. It's alive and well here in the States, too. A caveman diet is fine for adults, okay? We're fully grown, but a baby's not. We didn't grow up on a diet like that for a reason. Not to mention that what cavemen actually ate, it's not close to what people are calling paleo these days. Let's face facts here. Paleo diets, and like all these other diets, they're calorie restrictive. That's the bottom line. That's why people go on them. Babies need calories. So give them calories. When they're older and their bodies are developed, their organs are functioning the way they should be functioning, and they want to eat like their caveman parents, done. Do it. Knock yourself out. If you're so hung up on your weight, afraid you're going to grow a fat Albert for a kid, make sure you keep the food healthy and balanced. Eating steak, chicken, and plants is not going to cut it, and your kid is not going to have the energy it needs to get through a day of being an active child unless it has a balance of fruits and other natural sugars and, you know, just a natural diet. We can afford to cut carbs out of our diets. Kids can't. They're children. They have an active metabolism. And as long as they're not sitting on their asses all day and they're getting at least an hour's worth of exercise, you don't have to worry about it. They seem to still market a lot of cookbooks to women, too. I know women still do most of the cooking, but it's not like it was back in the 50s. You know, when America was great and women knew their place and black people had their own bathrooms and water fountains. Once I graduated high school, I didn't really pay attention to what was going on in our educational system. You know, I mean, why should I have, right? I mean, I made it out of that penitentiary. You know, no need to look back. Well, at some point, home ec went away. They don't have that anymore. Apparently, it had a lot to do with the fact that very few boys were signing up for it, and women started to feel like it was unfair, that they had to learn this shit on an unlevel playing field. It was sexist. Boys could sign up for it, and back in my day, when it was still available, I dabbled in it, but it put a target on your back. You were either a pussy or a homo, or both. You didn't sign up for home ec. You signed up for woodshop, or sports, or in Arkansas, where I went to school, FFA, which was Future Farmers of America. I knew I was never going to be a farmer, so learning how to sew a button on a shirt, or iron my clothes, or do well enough in the kitchen that I wouldn't chop my fingers off or burn my house down, kind of set me up for a future as an adult a lot better than, you know, wallowing in pig shit and learning how to milk a cow. But looking back, maybe it should have been a requirement for all kids, boys and girls. I've gone through this before, but it bears repeating. Women got fed up being tied to the house, having the responsibility of taking care of it and the kids, while daddy, you know, went off to the office, played golf, martini lunches, screwed his secretary on the side, then came home to a nice cocktail, a clean house, a home-cooked meal, screwed his wife, went to sleep, woke up the next day and repeated everything. If the responsibility was on both boys and girls to take this class, required, maybe we would see a more balanced society where families actually did eat dinner at the table more often. And look, I know that's getting a lot better, but it was bad for a very long time. Our fast food society created a lot of problems that still linger. And sexism still exists in a major way. But I think we've made leaps and bounds in all of this. Not to say there's still not a problem, or there's still not a lot of work to do, but knowing basic house stuff really sets kids up for success later in life, especially the shopping and cooking of food. And for the record, look, I turned into a pretty self-sufficient adult male, all right? I can cook, clean, do laundry, all the stuff I need to do to keep my house running efficiently, and I'm a handyman too, all right? So I've got that side of the coin covered. I didn't grow up to be a pussy, because I learned some things from home ec. I grew into a responsible adult. And I know a lot of guys who learned the ropes from their moms and their sisters, and they were better off for it. Well, I ranted a lot today. Sorry. Sorry. Not like it's any different from any other episode. Anyway, that's it for today. Thanks for tuning in. Listen to me ramble. Audio in this episode from Sundance. Music in this episode from David Guetta and Sinead Harnett. If you like the music, visit mylifeasafoodie.com. Purchase the songs and support the artists. Until next time, my name is Phil, and this has been My Life as a Foodie. Ciao.
Hurts me the most when I wake. I fumble and twist till the truth starts to click. There's so much space in this bed. These sheets go for months. Dreams of your smile. I don't want to be just a memory. And I don't want to feel your wings break free. Because without you, I'm lost in the breeze. I gotta be strong now. I gotta show you how I love you like I've never ever loved somebody. Cause I think I might do anything for you. If you just let me. If you just let me. If you just let me. Just let me. Taste of your lips is still fresh. The smell of your scent, how could I forget your words, how they cut me to shreds. But to tell you the truth, every piece is for you. I don't want to be just a memory. And I don't want to feel your wings break free. Because without you, I'm lost in the breeze. I gotta be strong now. I gotta show you how I love you like I've never ever loved somebody. I'll give you things you didn't even know you wanted. Don't tell me that it's not enough. My time is up, you're over us. Cause I think I might do anything for you. If you just let me. Yeah. If you just let me. Just let me.